You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I am Steve Dotto, and we are glad you are joining us this fine day. Art, how are you doing, Mr. Factora?
I feel strange that we're not playing a Chili Pepper song off the top.
Yeah, I know. Well, we chose the new music. Dave Hathaway sent us in that track. And what's the name of the band? It's
Sarcastic Mannequins.
The Sarcastic Mannequins. They're from the 90s. I like that music. It made me feel good. It made me feel happy.
Chipper.
It got me going. You know, speaking of music, I just got a notice from my YouTube channel. I've been working hard on growing our YouTube subscription, and we've actually this last week, and we passed 6,000 subscribers.
Whoa.
Which is pretty darn good. Since we started about a year ago with about 800, and so I do all the how-to videos there. And YouTube has just released to me two new things, which are kind of interesting. One is they've created this new user thing, which means called community, which allows me to actually see who's commenting on my videos and be able to reach back to them through Google Plus. I haven't figured it all out yet, but it's pretty exciting. So it could be a whole new social networking thing going, because YouTube is the great secret in the whole online marketing and social media world, because YouTube's the second biggest search engine on the planet. Only Google is a bigger search engine than YouTube. So people use it on a regular basis. So it's a contender. YouTube's going to be pretty exciting.
Oh, YouTube has become the university for people who don't go to university anymore.
Yeah, you look up everything. How do you change the light bulb on my Ford Focus?
I told you I just got a new MacBook Pro.
Yeah.
And I'm learning how to use iMovie. We went up to Kelowna for the weekend for the Food and Wine show, and I put together like a minute little vignette from all the clips that we put together, and it's getting some hits.
Good for you. How many hits are you up to?
Not as many as yours, but it's a start.
Well, you know, it's interesting when you think about it. You think about what success looks like on YouTube. Before I go on, though, the other issue that they've given me on YouTube is they've now given us a whole series of music tracks for backing music that are awesome. Now, that wasn't one that we were just listening to, but they've given us this whole collection of royalty-free music for using for backing tracks on videos. Now, I'm not sure what threshold. See, they kind of meter things out to people who are having success, and I notice as the popularity of our YouTube channel has increased, YouTube or in Google have been giving me more and more little perks to help me market myself and that sort of thing. So one of the things they did is about 4 or 5 months ago, when I hit about 5,000 subscribers, they sent me a note that said, now you can actually embed links to your homepage in your videos.
So that's what it takes. Okay. I tried to do that.
Oh, yeah. That's something. It takes you a while before you earn that right to do it, and you have to have no complaints against you and a clean record and active subscribers. And so it's just interesting. They're giving you the tools to help you build your community. So I find the whole YouTube space absolutely fascinating. But
like an online pat on the back.
Yeah.
Way to go, Steve.
But it's interesting what success looks like. You know, I'm doing a series of talks coming up for the folks from Social Media Camp. They're doing this boot camp around the province. And I'm doing a talk for them on YouTube, and I'm just writing it right now. But I wrote a promo for it the other day. I said, I don't know about getting millions of subscribers on YouTube, because some people get millions.
Yes.
But I figured out how to get thousands. And that, to me, is a pretty engaged group. You know, once you get into a few thousand people now, subscribe to your video. As soon as you post a video, it gets a couple hundred views within a couple of days, and it's off and running. And it's pretty exciting, because if you do have something to say, if you do have something interesting, you get some feedback right away on it. And you look for the likes. You know, you want people to be clicking. You want people
of
clicking.
Course.
You want people clicking on likes. Now, speaking of likes, you're going to like the show today. In just a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Mari Smith, who is the Facebook queen. She knows more about Facebook than any living person on the planet. Yesterday, I had the opportunity to speak to one of her insider groups. I spoke to them about my my 3 steps to inbox zero, teaching them how to get control of their email inbox. And Mary reciprocated by agreeing to come on the show. And she's going to be talking to us about the Social Media Success Summit, which is a huge online conference coming up next month. So we're going to be talking to Mari in a few minutes. But of importance locally to Canadians especially is the news out of Waterloo that's going on with the folks at BlackBerry. So we're going to welcome an old friend back. He's been so busy up in Kelowna all summer, he hasn't had time to visit with us.
I've seen the pictures.
Yeah, but Paul DeMera is going to be coming back down, and he's going to be visiting us, and he's going to be talking about what's happening in the mobile space. And we've really ignored the mobility space for a little while. We should have been talking more about what's happening with the iPhone. We certainly need to be talking about what's happening with BlackBerry. So Paul's going to help us with all of that. So we've got just a great show lined up, but we're going to start things off with Mari Smith. Joining me online from sunny San Diego is Mari Smith. Mari is, do you hate being called the Facebook queen, Mari, or do you like being royalty?
I love being royalty.
Well, you indeed are, and you sound like royalty. That's the best part. Most people couldn't pull it off, but you can pull it off with that nice Scottish accent of yours. Mari Smith, of course, is a well-known speaker. She's an expert on all things Facebook and social media related, and she's joining us to talk about a couple of different things. And the first is you're involved in just a huge online conference that's really a different model. Tell me about it.
Well, run by my dear friend Mike Stelzner, who is the founder of SocialMediaExaminer.com. And in fact, this is the 5th year running that Mike is presenting the Social Media Success Summit. And I remember when this baby was born, because what happened is that Mike actually started in 2009 with the summit, the Social Media Success Summit.
Oh.
And he is such a leader, and he's such a relationship builder. In fact, he wrote a book, Launch. It's just called Launch. I highly recommend that people pick a copy of that up. No matter what you're launching, whether it's online or offline, it's just such a great read. And Mike goes into great detail about how he launched one of the top 10 business blogs as a result of starting with this summit. So the idea of this summit is like, you know, we go to these events in person maybe, and you've got your travel and your airfare, your, you know, transportation, your accommodation, your meals, etc. You're away from your home or office for days on end, and you've got lots and lots of different speakers. And so that's one model, and I'm still a big fan of live events. I speak at live events, and I attend them regularly. However, another model is this virtual type of conference, this online summit, and you can gather a large number of speakers. I believe Mike has 43 or 45 in this upcoming summit.
Yeah.
Is it over 45? Yeah, yeah. And, you know, people can tune in from the comfort of their home and office. They don't even need to comb their hair. They can be sitting in their jammies and, you know, learn some tremendous information from really leaders on all these different topics. And so, you know, in May of 2009, that's when Mike did his first one. I was just delighted to team up with him back then and be one of his key presenters, and I have done every year since. And I typically lead a session or two on Facebook marketing. And, you know, there's sessions on all kinds of topics from now, especially from Twitter to Instagram, Pinterest, LinkedIn, podcasting, blogging, you name it.
Yeah.
So comprehensive.
Well, let's talk about the content in a second, but let's talk about the actual, the physical structure of the,
yeah,
of the summit, a little bit more. So the whole idea is people log on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's delivered in an online format, and they don't have to be in real time. They can watch the talks at any time, I guess. They're all going to be pre-recorded.
Yeah, they're recorded. They're presented live, but then they are recorded, and the attendees have access to the replays, the slide decks, as well as the video. I believe Mike gives them an access for a full year.
Yeah. Now, and the thing that's different from other conferences when you typically speak at a conference, you'll be a keynote, so you'll have the entire audience in your session. But then what typically happens in these conferences is there's breakout sessions at that point there, so you have to choose a track or a thread to follow, and you end up missing an awful lot of what's going on. That's not the case in this. What he's done is he's extended this conference over the entire, it's really over the entire month of October, right?
That's right. That's right.
So you don't miss anything. You can take in all of the different threads, hear what all of the different presenters are saying.
That's a really good point, because, you know, actually I think it's torture some people at times. I know I've seen people like this as many as 5 tracks, and they got to choose from like 20 different speakers, and they end up oscillating. Oh my gosh, am I making the right choice? And I got to sit in on this one, but I'm going to miss that one.
And the nature of a great conference is great speakers. And then it's, as you say, if you've flown somewhere and put up accommodation and paid your fee, and you've got 2 people who you really want to see that are speaking at the same time, well, you almost feel it's almost ends up being a negative, in the entire process. But you don't have this in this particular case,
right? You can pick and choose, and you're right. It does run over the month. Now it starts the Tuesday, October 1st, and I believe he has 3 sessions that day, and then it's, you know, he gives people some breaks in there, so you don't have to tune in.
Look at my calendar.
Day.
Yeah, there's 2 or 3 sessions a day, and it's just twice a week. I think if I recall.
3 times. There it goes. 3 sessions a day. 3 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So you get your Friday through Monday, you get that off to study and implement.
That's right. And so the sessions are an hour each. Now, are you doing question and answers at the end, or are these going to be locked into 1 hour on and off?
They're actually 45 minutes.
Oh, okay.
And with a 15-minute break in between each of the sessions that run back-to-back.
Okay.
So like a session that would start at noon, that goes from noon to you know 12 to 12:45, it's usually about 35 minutes of content, pure content, no selling, no pitching, nothing but really practical, tactical, strategic content, and then about 10 minutes of live Q&A.
Now, that's an interesting point to talk about, because I'm looking at the list of speakers, and almost all of them typically are experts in social media, but most of them also have something to sell. But are you saying that they're coming on and they aren't going to be selling their product? They're going to be giving us just value?
Zero sales. In fact,
awesome.
Mike absolutely kicks people out if they try to sell, because people have spent the money to buy the ticket for the conference. And so we have all agreed as speakers to really present our best material. And, you know, it's a win for us as well. We always get more exposure and followers and inquiries. If people are interested to work with any of the speakers, then they will certainly inquire.
Well, I like that idea. And so now, have you been working? Now, do you stress over this particular conference because you want to come up with something unique, something new?
You know, I'm very blessed with a disposition that doesn't stress too much. I just am so passionate about what I do. I can do it in my sleep practically. So sometimes, if there's any stress, it's because I will wait to the last minute to create my slide deck. But I do that on purpose, Steve, because, you know, Facebook is changing so often. I want my slides and my content to be bang up to date for everybody on the webinar. But I love it. I love doing these webinars. I love the live Q&A. I like to take the little, what do you call that thing? It's a little pointer that you can mark the screen up.
Oh, okay.
Telestrator or something like that.
Yeah.
And I like to draw on the screen and show people. And then I also go over and show them some live demos. So we're not on webcam. This particular one doesn't do webcam, but you definitely can see the desktop with some live demos and get some real practical takeaways.
Well, I think speaking to the immediacy of the information that you're talking about, I mean, before we went on air today, I briefly mentioned to you that I'd seen a brand new feature that's just been folded into YouTube, which allows people to build, to communicate with their subscribers on YouTube, which is brand new. It's the first time. Now, it's not Facebook related, which is your specialty, but that just popped up this morning. And it's the stuff changes so fast, and the information changes so fast, and the way that these social media companies like Facebook and YouTube and Google Plus, the way that they add features with no warning whatsoever, all of a sudden they appear, and then it's up to us to just to discover how they work. That's why you wait till the last minute, I guess.
Well, yeah, partly, but you know what? I really like to teach some evergreen strategies and as well, you know, and then the tools and, you know, what buttons to press. Those are the things that we you know, continually updating people on. But like an evergreen strategy that applies to whatever social network you use is a 3-part approach of a content strategy. You've got to have continual good quality relevant content going on your different social sites, the ones that you choose to use. Most people, it's Facebook and Twitter at minimum. And then the second component is an engagement strategy. You've got to be replying to people, initiating conversations, and, you know, sending out replies to comments and whatnot. And the third component is conversion, is that you need to be thinking with strategic business mind. So it's not enough to just go, okay, I've got great content, I'm chit-chatting, but, you know, where's the money? Or how come I'm not getting sales? And I say to people, well, you know, have you asked for the sale? Have you made it obvious how to do business with you? Have you tweeted out a link to, you know, go buy something from you recently. And it's like, oh my gosh, I can use social media to sell? Of course you can.
A lot of people are afraid to.
Yeah.
They're afraid that it's not the appropriate forum for it. They think that they're stepping over some imaginary line or code.
Yeah. It's a fine balance because you want to build rapport and trust. You really, I mean, I wrote the book on relationship marketing, and it's really, it takes time to build that trust and rapport. But you need to always be strategic about interspersing your conversations and your value-adding content with some calls to action. And you and I both know there's a wonderful model out there that's been working for years online where you're going to give some things away for free. You know, you can drive people to an opt-in page to give them a free video or a free course, or I know an e-zine or something like that, or even just to sign up to get your blog posts, and then you start to build a relationship even deeper through email marketing or email blasts.
We're just going to take a quick break, Mario. Can you stick around for a little bit more? I want to talk to you a little bit more about the summit, but then I also got some questions for you about general Facebook questions.
Can more
you
than happy. Those?
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. You're tuned in to Dottotech. I have Mari Smith, the Facebook queen, on with me. We'll be back in just a few seconds.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better. Dottotech, visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
I am still online with Mari Smith, the Facebook queen. I'm genuflecting to royalty right now. I just wanted to let you know because I feel like I should be. Nobody knows more about Facebook than Mari. And I hate to blow smoke at you, Mari, but really, I took your online course, it was called Extreme Fan Base Building. What was
growth.
The name of your
course?
Yeah,
Extreme Fan Base Growth.
Extreme Fan Base Growth. And it was an 8-week, a 4-week course. Mm-hmm. And just to give you, just to set your bona fides a little bit, I had not done a very good job on dealing with Facebook for this show, for my brand. I'd concentrated on other things. And I just didn't really get the whole Facebook thing. And I didn't dive into it very closely. But within 4 weeks of the walking through your program, we completely revamped the Facebook page on our site. We went from about 600 people that were never engaging in Facebook at all with us to now, I guess, 1,700 or 1,800 Facebook fans that are engaged. They're getting information about the show. They're participating in the show. And I feel like I'm part of a community. I feel like they're getting value back. They're finding out about our videos ahead of time. They're commenting. It seems like there's fun and energy on our Facebook page. And that's because of you. That's because of the stuff that you taught me. And it was for me. It's turned around my attitude and my joy at dealing with the Facebook page. It used to be, and I'm sure a lot of people feel this way about their business. My Facebook page used to be an embarrassment. It's not really the right term, but it used to be something that created anxiety for me because I didn't know what I should be doing and I didn't know how to service that population or to turn it into something that was a community asset for me. Mm-hmm. But your course taught me how to do that. So I thank you for that.
My pleasure.
And that's still available. People can still take that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go back to this social media success summit a bit more, and then we'll return with a few more Facebook questions. But this success summit, one thing, there's 45 speakers besides you. Now, you get to kick it off on the first day. Are you like the keynote of keynotes for it? Are you like the superstar?
Certainly for Facebook. My dear friend Jay Baer is doing the initial opening keynote. He's the author of a book called Utility, Y-O-U, Utility. Why you need to rethink your social media marketing. And then I'm immediately following him with the Facebook keynote.
Wow, that's so cool. Now, do you participate and listen to the other speakers? Is this something that you look forward to and you block off time to make sure that you can cover as much of it as you can?
You know, I'm glad you asked me that because I'm going to answer that with two hats. And because I know a lot of your listeners are business owners or entrepreneurs, or they're looking for better ways to market themselves. And some of them, many of them might be fellow workshop leaders or public speakers. And so if I put my hat on as a presenter, some of my ninja tricks, as I call them, I take key points out of my presentation and I pre-schedule tweets in Hootsuite to go out coinciding with my presentation. And I have the hashtag, and I will periodically say to people, you know, oh, I just tweeted out the link. I've been doing this for years, and anytime I do a talk, whether it's webinar or live on stage, and what the beautiful thing about that in terms of a Twitter strategy is that invariably my tweets will be the most retweeted of that. that entire conference because I've crafted it the way I want it. I've given some links, some value that's short so people can retweet it and add a comment. So that's from a speaker standpoint.
What a cool idea.
Yeah, yeah. And so they just, and sometimes I've even done this where I'll tweet something out and the first person to do something wins a, you know, a signed book, something like that. It's a fun thing to do in a live audience. Mm. And then as an attendee, yes, actually, more than likely, I will attend several of the sessions live, and I will also participate as an attendee in the live Twitter conversation using the hashtag. And it's a great way for me to learn and keep up to date on some of these other social platforms that I don't spend much time on, like Pinterest you know, Google Plus or whatever. But also, it's a great way for me to add value to my followers, people that haven't even signed up for the course. They're going to get some golden nuggets coming across their,
because if you're
Twitter
commenting
stream
on it, they're interested in your opinion and seeing it through your lens. So by you tweeting about it and commenting on it, they'll get that commentary, as it were.
Sure. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So is there any one area that you're excited to learn about yourself? Like personally, me, I'm looking forward to the Google Plus speakers because I still don't get that space.
Well, yeah, I do know Google Plus really well and Twitter. There's someone who's going to present on SlideShare. I think that's an interesting one because SlideShare gets some tremendous SEO. And there's several sessions on Pinterest. I might tune into a couple of those. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure Mike has podcasting in here. You know,
I'm Cliff Ravenscroft is on the menu.
Cliff, And Michael Hyatt and Chris Brogan as well. I think he has some panels too. That's how he manages to get several folks in there. But Cliff, I'm definitely going to tune into Cliff's session because I'm you know, launching a podcast is in my near future.
Oh, really? Good for you. Oh, yes. Well, I can learn from all these guys, so I'm gonna listen to it all. So that starts on October the 1st. We'll have a link on our site, but basically if you go to socialmediaexaminer.com, you can find the link there to go through to if you're interested in signing up to participate and watch. And I think the last numbers that Michael put forward was something like they're closing in on 2,000 people registered already.
Yeah, I think they're even over that. I actually think he's going to get close to 3,000, which, by the way, another reason for folks to participate is that is some tremendous networking. Oh. And what also comes with not only all these sessions is that people get invited to a closed LinkedIn group.
Yes.
And it works similarly to a Facebook group, but there's more like forums and subjects and just a really nice caliber of professionals. They're all networking and supporting one another. So
it's going to be an October to remember if you're looking to learn about social media. And the social media marketing is such an evolutionary and it's so new to so many people in business that I've been really deep in learning in this space for the last couple of months myself as we've launched a new series of courses, which you've helped me with significantly. Thank you very much. But I told my best friend, he was talking to me about it, and I said, he noticed a kind of an extra energy in me, and I said, I feel like it's 1996 again. Or sorry, 1986, back when the Mac was launched, and I was just learning, and I was really, for the first time, just drinking from a fire hose as far as what I was learning. And that's the way I feel about social media marketing. There's just so much to learn, so many ideas that I feel like we're drinking from a fire hose again. And this online social media conference might be the fire hose of all fire hoses for that.
True. The beautiful thing, though, is that really the 80-20 rule applies. If you even just listened live to 20% of the sessions or take 20% of what you learned on the sessions and just pick one or two things out of that 20% and implement. The key is to take massive action and don't allow yourself to get overwhelmed. You'll never master all platforms at once unless you've got a bottomless resource and wallet, you know, and a team to help you.
but understanding what the options are and what each platform brings to the table, that alone is tremendous value. Let's make things a little bit easier and simpler. Let's return to the Facebook world, which so many more of us are comfortable. And I guess since last we talked, is the group that's signing up most for Facebook still now the baby boomers? Is it becoming the domain of the baby boom generation now?
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting because I think as far as recognizing where the future of these online social networks are going in the next, gosh, 10 years, 5 to 10 years, is to look at what the young teens are doing, the tweens even as they call them, you know, like 13 to whatever, 14, 15, those young ones. They're typically not really that happy about being on a site where their parents are, and they're particularly using, you know, an app called Snapchat is really popular with the the young folks. And so we, you know, as business people and marketers, we do need to keep a half an eye on the far distant horizon as to where's all this going. Now, I think Facebook's going to be around forever. I think they have a really rock solid foothold on this arena. You know, Mark Zuckerberg is one of the most innovative people on the planet. Some of the things that they're doing to get free Wi-Fi and various local businesses all over the country and probably internationally at some point. That's an internet internet.org, they're working to get internet services all over the world, and it's just incredible. So I think, you know, the more people that get onto the site, the more people will just, you know, keep interacting and engaging. But you've got Google Plus. You know, Google Plus really is it's a search engine that was social layer added on top of it, whereas Facebook would start as a social and then they added a search layer on top of that. So they all have their place. They all have their place. But we do have to just, you know, keep on our toes, keep nimble, keep flexible with your plans.
Could I ask you to take a step back with one of the social aspects of Facebook that I see a lot of people complaining about the new search algorithms that are on Facebook. Is it called Graph Search?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of there seems to be a lot of fear mongering that I see occasionally appearing in people's posts saying that this is a new and unique invasion of privacy. Can you put that into context for us?
Yeah. Well, I think same with hashtags too. And hashtags and Graph Search, every feature on Facebook is what they call privacy aware. So if you post something or you have a setting, you have any content whatsoever that you've shared to friends only, then that prevails throughout the entire site. Only friends can see that post. One slight exception would be if you've tagged, let's say you tagged three friends, what happens is then the friends of those friends can see it. So it's like they call it friends of friends, so friends of the tagged people. Just keep that in mind. But otherwise, nothing will be public to the whole world unless you set it that way. So Graph Search really does have its use. An example I like to use, let's say I'm looking to buy a home here in buy an investment property or something in San Diego, and you know, one of my values is spirituality, so I might put in this Graph Search realtors in San Diego who one of their interests is listed as spirituality, and by the way, they're friends of my friends, so there's going to be a connection there. I could ask somebody to make a word of mouth referral or introduction for me. So I punched that in, realtors, friends of friends, San Diego, spirituality, and I will get like 5, 6, 7 results. And then I'm like handpicking people that I might want to go and connect with. And so there's things like that. Another thing you could do is like with a business page, let's say you're wanting to increase your fan base, you could do a search for pages liked by people who like, in my case would be Mari Smith, like the name of your page. You're looking for like the broader audience. What other pages do people like that who've liked you, who are fans of yours? And you could place some ads targeting those other fan pages.
And that's one of the biggest changes recently in Facebook is the advertising strategy, where we're now starting to see ads appearing in our news feed. Now, the feed is that section that you see that has all of the updates from all of your friends that runs as soon as you log into Facebook. It's usually the first thing you see. It's that homepage where you see kind of status updates from all of your friends with all of the funny posts and all the nice pictures and all their comments. We see advertising within there now. First of all, it's a tremendous place to reach people from an advertiser's perspective. But do you think that people are, do you think there's a bit of a backlash to that coming from the Facebook community, from people feeling that they're now being marketed too aggressively?
Yeah, you know, I've even seen some reports that as much as half of the content in the newsfeed is paid. It's paid content. And the easy way to spot that is it's got sponsored right next to it. Anything that says sponsored has been paid for. In the newsfeed. However, some really, as a marketer, as a business person, some really important facts and stats we have to keep in mind is that of the 1.1 billion active users, two-thirds of them, 75%, are accessing the site through mobile. So they don't have that sidebar. They do not see ads on the site. Those ads on the site are only viewable on desktop.
Mm.
So on the mobile, all people are looking at is the newsfeed. So you can pay to have content in that newsfeed. And by the way, the mobile users are twice as active as the desktop-only users. So it's extremely useful and valuable as a marketer. But as a user, yep, you know, I got to tell you, Steve, there's been times where I have hidden content. You can hover over it, click the little icon in the top right of the post and just say, you know, I don't want to see this. And you're letting Facebook know, you know, don't place that ad to me from this company or in this topic because it's not of interest to me.
Yet, as often as you've had to do that, the one thing that amazes me and the one thing that I think everybody should kind of take a deep breath and pause is advertising is going to happen to you wherever you live in this world that we live in. And the advertising that comes to you in that Facebook feed is usually fairly relevant to your interests and your lifestyle.
Well, yeah, because you know, I've always said that Facebook ads is absolutely the most targeted traffic that your advertising dollars can buy. It's just incredible the granular targeting that you can do, and I highly recommend that people that want to really get into Facebook ads, that they utilize what's called Power Editor. If they just go to facebook.com/ads and then go to create an ad. Actually go to manage ads and over on the left, look for the link that actually says Power Editor, or they could go to facebook.com/Power Editor. But the reason it is a bit more complex, but I got to tell you, it's incredible the granular targeting you could do. I mean, you can also choose in the Power Editor, you can choose placement. You could place ads that only appear in the newsfeed of new iPhone 5 users.
Yeah.
Owners, you know.
And so that means that if you're advertising a product that's specifically for them, that you're just going to reach that narrow marketplace. You'll pay a little bit more as an advertiser, but to the end user, you're just going to, you know, you are being targeted, you are being socially manipulated to a certain extent, but I'd much rather have that space, which is going to go to advertising no matter what. I mean, the bottom line is advertising is not going to go away just because you find it irritating. I'd much rather have the ads that appear in my feed, things like fly fishing resorts, even if I can't afford to go, I'd much rather have that than, you know, dating information, which I'm not interested in.
Right. Right. So, you're absolutely right. They've done studies on this. They've done surveys of users and they tolerate the ads to a certain degree. Some people don't mind them. Some people like them. Some people hate them. But basically, the studies have absolutely proven pretty much conclusively that people would far, far rather an extremely targeted ad. You know, I've seen ads that will say the headline will be woman in her 40s in San Diego. And I'm like, dang, that's me. How do they know that's me?
And then you hover. It should say woman in her 40s who looks in her 30s. They should say that. They really should say that if they want to engage with
you're
you.
Absolutely
just a suggestion to the company that's doing that. Mari, thanks so much for the time. I appreciate the information that you've shared, and I'm looking forward to your original first time ever delivered with no advertising included keynote at the Social Media Success Summit. One of some 45 talks from just media luminaries as far as this space is concerned. It's going to be, you know, you mentioned Chris Brogan. I see Pat Flynn on there, who's a really interesting individual. He actually exposes his income to us every month, which, have you checked out his blog?
I have. Yep. Pat.
He talks about social media marketing and how he makes money, and he tells us how much money he makes, which I'm kind of uncomfortable with in some ways, but at the same time, I go and look every month. How'd Pat do this month? which is a little bit bizarre. Cliff Ravenscroft, as you mentioned, he's the podcast answer man. He's going to be on it. James Wedmore, who's I think his stock might rise with this new YouTube. He's a YouTube marketing specialist, and with this the ability to connect with YouTube. YouTube audience members, your YouTube followers that YouTube announced today, that space is going to get exciting in a hurry, even more exciting than it already is. So it's just a tremendously exciting space, and I think that it's going to be a great kickoff having you start the whole thing off on, that's a week yesterday, right? It's Tuesday is your talk on October the 1st, right?
Correct. That is indeed.
Good. So we will have a link to this. Is there anything that I forgot?
I think that's about it. I mean, gosh, like I say, you know, folks want to check out this conference and they get the added support of the LinkedIn group, yeah, as well as access to many of the speakers. The beautiful thing is many of the speakers come into that LinkedIn group if people have extra questions. So, yeah, I look forward to it. It's awesome.
It's good.
Thanks so much for this time.
Oh, my pleasure. And if you are interested in a little bit more on this Facebook advertising and running your Facebook group and engaging with your audience, Mari Smith, which is Extreme Fan Base Engagement. Did I say it right?
Growth.
Extreme Fan Base Growth. MariSmith.com is the place to go, and you can take the course in a much compressed form. I took it over 1 month, and it's how we, if you are impressed with what we've done with the Dottotech fan page, with the Dottotech Facebook page, that is, that's all the stuff that I learned taking Mari's course, so I can't endorse that enough. Mari, thanks so much for your time. We'll look forward to, we'll get you back on in a couple more months, but I'm looking forward to seeing what you have to say October 1st.
Thank you.
Have a good day there.
You too. Bye.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better. By London Except Drugs. Maybe you. Nobody does it better. Except maybe you.
We're going to change topics right now. We're going to roll in, and we have Paul DeMera joining us. Have we seen you since the beginning of summer, Paul?
I've been hiding up in the Okanagan.
Yeah, Paul has property up in the Okanagan, and he is semi-retired or mostly retired. So he hung out in the Okanagan for the entire summer. You must have had a great summer.
I did. It was awesome.
I am on the horns of dilemma. I'm wearing about 3 sweaters at home these days because it's September, and I have a rule. I don't know if you have this rule, but I have a rule that the furnace does not turn on until the end of September in the house, no matter how cold it gets. And it's getting kind of chilly in the morning right now. Have you turned your furnace on?
Yeah, okay, I admit to it. I just turned it on yesterday. A little chilly last night with the clear sky, I guess.
What about you, Art?
It was a whole summer of no blankets on the bed, and yesterday I tuckered down underneath my duvet.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's, yeah, it's getting chilly.
I can't, I am not happy with this. This isn't good. How unhappy I am with this is not nearly as unhappy as BlackBerry shareholders are with BlackBerry. So this week the news starts to come down. The sales of BlackBerry have not been, the new devices have not been what BlackBerry needed. Nowhere near what BlackBerry needed in order to turn the corner. It's been an unmitigated disaster there, and their stock has plummeted. And as a result, they made the difficult announcement last week that they were going to lay off some 4,000, I think, of their employees.
4,500, actually.
4,500 of their employees. So it was devastating news for that community. And once again, devastating news for a Canadian telecom space where we take a Canadian company takes tremendous leadership, builds a huge enterprise, and then sees it just basically the underpinnings completely wash away from that enterprise, as we saw it happen with Nortel a couple of decades ago now. And so it's happening yet again with BlackBerry. And this week the news comes down that Fairfax Financial, which was one of BlackBerry's biggest shareholders, has decided to buy out the entire company. And what I guess it's just a bit of a stay of execution while they rework things. So that's going to be the first topic is what's happening to BlackBerry in your opinion?
Well,
Paul?
So here's the funny thing about BlackBerry. They still have, I was looking this up today just to be on top of it. I think it's $1.9 billion in revenue for the quarter, the last quarter. The problem is they've got $1 billion worth of phones sitting there that aren't getting sold. So
yes,
people aren't moving to the new stuff fast enough or at any kind of pace that's going to help them, right?
And I think we can agree that this ship has sailed. People are not going to buy the BlackBerry handset, at least not in North America or Europe.
So the question is the enterprise space still going to stay on board? Or are they going to jump ship real quick? Because, you know, from my past life, I could see, you know, a number of businesses that hadn't even moved to iPhone as a couple of years ago. So they were living in the BlackBerry world. And I can think of governments, for instance, the federal and provincial government. They were highly focused on the BlackBerry product because of the security aspect. So in the enterprise space, that's the big question. Is that going to continue on? Because it sounds like they may be focusing on that. Or is that going to be a problem? And are those folks going to move on to something else? That's really, in my opinion, the only hope they have is to somewhat retrieve this raise from the Phoenix with the enterprise space.
Which means that they will pretty much fall from the view of the consumer because the handsets are doomed, I think we can probably agree. But I think if we were to talk to IT managers, the corporate IT managers, they would like to see BlackBerry survive because they like BlackBerry Enterprise Server. They like the security aspects. They like how it gives them control over the mobile assets within their company. And more importantly, they like the control it gives the security, the security it gives them to protect their digital assets.
They can lock things down because of the hundreds and hundreds of policies the BES allows you to manage to the device. So you have these devices out in the field that people are walking around with, and you can literally control absolutely everything. In fact, you can turn off things like YouTube if you don't want it for certain people to manage the data usage. So they love that control side of it, and it's really protecting the company's assets if you think about it.
But does any other
device offer the same level?
Does any other product offer them that same level of security?
No. No, others are good. Things like the iPhone have some policies, but you're talking about 20, 30 policies versus literally hundreds of policies for the BlackBerry.
But the BlackBerry Enterprise, so walk me through this a little bit. So the BlackBerry Enterprise Server, or BES as the industry calls it, it has policies now that can control not only your BlackBerry's access to this different data, but it will also control an iPhone's, and it will also
yes.
control an Android phone's access to these things. So it's still the best tool for
it's the
corporate IT managers to manage the mobile assets.
One-stop shop, basically using ActiveSync with the other devices. That's how it does it. And
which is a Microsoft product.
Well, it's kind of around through the Exchange server. So there's a number of components. See, nobody ever sees this stuff. I got to see it because I used to, you know, help install it for people. The BES itself is a hidden piece of equipment. You never see that unless you're an IT person. But it does what it does. It does exactly what you said, manages devices. But now they've made it so it manages other devices like iPhones and Android devices through ActiveSync, which goes through the Exchange server because it's always been really tightly integrated with the Exchange server, which is, you know, how corporations mostly do their mail. So that's all wonderful stuff. Is it enough for these folks to keep going with it? It could be. As far as the consumer space goes, you know, we've already sort of shared that. It's not looking warm and fuzzy, that's for sure, with the sales.
How much money does BlackBerry make off of BES?
They actually have subscriptions to it with software licenses, and there's a number of components that make up their revenue stream, not just the hardware sales. Mm-hmm. So they have an ongoing revenue stream for people that are on the BlackBerry Enterprise server itself. Carriers participated in that as well. So there was always something called the BES tax, and because of the way the security works, the carriers were involved with BlackBerry to route that traffic. Mm-hmm. So the carriers participated in that revenue stream as well. They sent some money to BlackBerry. So there's a number of pieces here that are all part of this puzzle that people are trying to put together, and the general public's not widely aware of all of this stuff. So as I said, I think the enterprise space still potentially has some legs, but the consumer space certainly, I think the ship sailed, as you suggest. It's it's an iPhone, Android world now, and maybe a little bit of Windows. You know.
And the one area that they are reaching out to consumers is they made an announcement very quickly that they were gonna allow BBM, BlackBerry Messenger. They were going to port it out for the iPhone. So they've obviously had it sitting there, and they've been holding it in abeyance, and now it's out there. Is that going to make a difference?
Well, you know, the funny thing is, three years ago, BlackBerry Messenger was the default standard for people to chat back and forth. If they didn't want to do SMS, right? That's how they did it.
Well,
they
loved it. It cost money. For instance, I had a BlackBerry at the time, and I gave my son a BlackBerry when he started school so that we could we could use BlackBerry Messenger, and we used it exclusively.
You didn't have to pay for text.
I had a small group of friends that I communicated with the most by texting, and we BBM'd all the time.
Yep.
And that just, I missed that, actually, because that was a nice, clean instant, because you could see them typing.
Yeah.
And that sort of stuff, which today you can on the iPhone
again. Other
stuff
shows, yeah.
But that was the first time that you could actually see that you were actually engaged in a conversation and had that full feedback.
Yep. And so that was very popular. I know a lot of friends of mine jumped on that bandwagon because of that app. I think that world's changed a little bit now, as you described, with iPhones and other devices and some of the apps. So is that enough for consumers? I always say compelling reason. People buy stuff based on a compelling reason. And I don't see that in the consumer space for BlackBerry, but I do see it in the enterprise space still. Mm. I really do. I know that the people that have this stuff already in place, the BlackBerry servers that are out there, would like to grow that because of the control side of it. They you know, there's a reason why everybody's on Microsoft at the office. Is because of Active Directory that controls the machine.
Well,
so
is this release of BBM perhaps a precursor to them making a stronger thrust in pushing the BlackBerry Enterprise server to the fore? Because by releasing BlackBerry Messenger, it means that everybody that's got the BlackBerry Enterprise server can start to use BBM on all of their devices so they can use it through their corporate network, and then they can save all of the texting charges, and they have that much more immediacy and all that sort of stuff.
And the funny thing is, you know, BlackBerry has for years played around with putting software code on different devices, and it's BlackBerry built in, and there's some other names that they've used over the years that allow them to have a little piece of kernel that basically allows you to get into the BlackBerry world, like BBM, but beyond that, for email and other applications like mail and contacts. So they could start playing in that space as well and say, okay, you know what? We're not going to go crazy on the devices. We're going to sell our software, our you know, some other services. We're going to sell the best. We're going to focus on that as the revenue growth because the device market is cutthroat. I mean, let's face it, it's brutal, right?
Well, and
maybe that's the answer.
And you know, part of us has always known that they've never had the horses to compete with Apple or Samsung, which is just, I mean, those are the two handset makers. And now we're seeing a huge investment back in it by Motorola, backed by Google.
Yep.
So just
you need a big bag of money to play in that space, in the hardware space these days. I really do. And
so if we look at how big BlackBerry was a week ago,
right?
They've cut 4,500 jobs.
Yep.
If BlackBerry was to become an enterprise company, so they moved, they slipped into the background. They became like IBM is today,
or Cisco, I mean, really,
they're going to become a services company. How big are they? If they're successful at that point, like is it is the handset in that side, in the consumer side of the company, 2/3 of the company in its full size, a half of the company in its full size? How big do you think they are?
I think the thing that you look at is the revenue stream and the revenue stream growth. They can make a lot more money doing the enterprise thing than the cutthroat business of hardware, because as soon as it doesn't sell, you take the big write down. So they could make a lot of money selling their complete solution, and if they're smart, potentially allowing that software on other devices like iPhones and Android devices as a separate piece. They've talked about that and played with it in the past. I've tested their software. It works pretty cool. Phone works.
That's my phone working on it. Nobody phones me.
No, they call you today at the show.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all good.
It's probably BBM asking you not to be so harsh.
It's actually Shannon calling me. She's got the dog and the cat at the vet. So there's probably news about one or the other.
Yeah.
Yes. So anyways, continue what you're saying.
I guess the bottom line is I see a bigger picture here than just the hardware sales. I see the whole, you know, enchilada of what BlackBerry's all about, including the Bez and the software and the intellectual property, the patents and all that good stuff. And, you know, you need somebody at the helm that says, okay, the new strategy is going to be X. Mm-hmm. The previous strategy was let's get into the consumer space and play there. And we've seen, you know, with the playbook and the new, latest hardware, consumers aren't embracing this equipment. They're just not. I want that really bad. They're not lining up for it like they are for some other brand. But enterprise customers have always loved the security, the stability. You know, there was always a roadmap to the future devices, so you know where you were going. There was the right things for enterprise. So if we keep going down that path, there's a potential for them to raise the phoenix, as they say, and you know, potentially come back to a profitable organization, because that's what they got to do, profitability, right? They've got to be profitable, otherwise it's over.
And I think that everybody that's talking about the death of BlackBerry, which I see a lot of people speaking about now, I think that they aren't really looking at the entire picture. As you say, they've got well over $1 billion in cash to float them through the next phase.
Yep. They've got a revenue stream.
Now, they will go through that pretty fast.
Yep.
They do have a revenue stream. So
they've got a burn rate that's nasty, though. Yeah.
Well, not nearly as nasty as it was a week ago.
True.
And they still have a viable industry-leading product in an important space.
Yes.
And so they can make the decision that they're going to be a smaller, leaner company that goes in this direction. And at that point there, the BlackBerry Enterprise Server becomes a very competitive product that you know, as long as that marketplace, I have to feel that, as long as that marketplace understands and knows that BlackBerry's full intention is to support and remain in that space.
Yes.
That's what they need to create confidence in.
Absolutely.
That space.
And if they go down that path and they can show everybody in the enterprise space, hey, we're here to stay in this world. We're going to defocus the consumer stuff. And yeah, sure, consumers may still buy it, but we're going to focus exclusively on the enterprise space, work really closely with the carriers, do what they did really, really well when they started out. I remember when this started back in 1999, I got my first BlackBerry. They really had their act together from the enterprise point of view. We had to show people how it all worked, but it was easy to show them the value and what it was. The consumer space, just it's too fickle. It's just too hard to compete.
I think it's too easy for us to jump all over BlackBerry now and to forget exactly what they meant.
Yeah.
They had a product which for 10 years
was
ubiquitous with the term mobility.
Yep.
And you'd see, if you watch older movies, you'd see them saying, they talk about BlackBerry. They didn't talk about
Crackberry.
what are we up to for time? Have we got another segment after this? Oh, we're almost out of time for the show? Good heavens, have we run out of time already? So we got to wrap things up? He keeps nodding. This is
great
radio.
Yeah, well.
This is great radio.
You get me going, right?
Oh, no kidding.
We should take a quick break and then come and wrap.
We'll take a quick break. We'll wrap things up. Okay, we're going to do that. I'm Steve Dotto. You're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better. Question for Dotto Tech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dotto Tech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
We just have a couple more minutes before the end of the show. We've got Paul DeMera here and, of course, Art Factor. We've been discussing all things BlackBerry for the last half hour or so, and we never even got into the iPhone, and I wanted to spend some time talking about iOS 7. Have you upgraded yet, Art?
I did. It took an hour out of my day, which made me difficult to check my Facebook.
Ah, that's the cutoff. And what about you, Paul? Have you upgraded?
I did my wife, so actually she did her own, and I've been playing around with it, and I'm staying on 6 and comparing it to 7, so I'm looking into it. Yeah,
I've upgraded. I don't hate it. I don't love it. I feel like they haven't quite finished it yet. The flat graphics don't get me going.
You really have to go and Google iOS 7 tips.
Yeah.
Because there's a bunch of them out there. Because there's no manual for it. You just
New Mail. I do like the new mail. I played with it last night for a little while, the new Apple Mail, because I'm down on Apple Mail, as everybody knows.
Yeah.
But the new iOS 7 Mail, they've done a pretty good job from what I've seen.
You know, switching from app to app without having to close down, you can slide over.
The new application, fast application switcher, I think they call it, or something like that.
Accessibility is also your friend. You might think, I have to be blind to use it, but in there you can change font sizes, bold text, and all that stuff. That can make a difference, too, because of the flat graphics, right? So that's what I've been playing around with. And it's good stuff.
I might want to make my graphics bigger, text bigger, because that's me. I want my eyes, they're in terrible shape. They're in just terrible, terrible shape. Next week, I think next week, in 2 weeks, we're moving time.
Yes, we are.
Can you believe this?
Going to Thursdays.
Oh, man. What's going to happen to App Wednesday? We have to come up with a new name for App Wednesday.
How about App Thursday?
I'm thinking of calling it App Wednesday a day late. Do you think that's a long title?
App Wednesday and a half.
App Wednesday next day. App Wednesday the day after.
It's the day after Wednesday.
So we're going to move to 7 o'clock on Thursdays following the Food and Wine Show, which isn't a bad place. I mean, they probably need us to kind of boost their numbers a bit, right?
No guarantees that I'll be completely sober when we do the show.
No guarantees you're completely sober now. That is all the time we have. I need to thank Mari Smith for spending time with us today. Paul DeMera for coming in again.
You're still
wearing shorts, but it is the end of summer. Art Factor, thank you very much, sir. And I am Steve Dotto. We will see you next week right here, same time next week, at least for one more week, here on Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.